eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches when she wasn't around. And when we had biscuits, I would set the honey in front of her, maybe helping her to forget that the jelly was in the refrigerator. But eventually we ran out. It was a very sad day. It was kind of a small jar, so I hope Nikki's listening to that. When that day came that I ran out of the jelly, I realized how much I envied Bobby. He probably didn't have to worry about running out. The spoon hitting the bottom of his jar means nothing. He just reaches and gets another full jar. It's probably an unlimited supply at his house. And I even had this thought. He has more than he deserves. Why does he get the jelly while I get to stare at this empty jar? It's not right. It's just not fair. Well, this morning we're going to be exploring a universal, secret, and deadly sin, and it's called envy. It began with the first two brothers in history, Cain and Abel, and has been one of Satan's most effective and strategic distractions ever since. Envy is the whining of why you and not me. Envy doesn't get near the amount of press that adultery and murder and addiction and stealing does, but the consequences of envy can be disastrous. And as we continue to visit Moses' life, we run across a crystal clear example of envy in Numbers chapter 12. So if you want to open your Bible, a text will also be on the screen. But Numbers chapter 12, the first 15 verses. Here's the story of two brothers and a sister. Miriam and Aaron began to talk against Moses because of his Cushite wife, for he had married a Cushite. Has the Lord spoken only through Moses, they ask? Hasn't he also spoken through us? And the Lord heard this. Now Moses was a very humble man, more humble than anyone else on the face of the earth. At once the Lord said to Moses, Aaron, and Miriam, come out to the tent of meeting, all three of you. So the three of them went out, and then the Lord came down in a pillar of cloud. He stood at the entrance to the tent and summoned Aaron and Miriam. When the two of them stepped forward, he said, listen to my words. When there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, reveal myself to them in visions. I speak to them in dreams, but this is not true of my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my house. With him, I speak face to face, clearly and not in riddles. He sees the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? The anger of the Lord burned against them, and he left them. And when the cloud lifted from above the tent, Miriam's skin was leprous. It became white as snow. Aaron turned toward her and saw that she had a defiling skin disease, and he said to Moses, please, my Lord, I ask you not to hold against us the sin we have so foolishly committed. Do not let her be like a stillborn infant, coming from its mother's womb with its flesh half eaten away. So Moses cried out to the Lord, please, God, heal her. The Lord replied to Moses, if her father had spit in her face, would she not have been in disgrace for 7 days? Confine her outside the camp for 7 days, and after that she can be brought back. So Miriam was confined outside the camp for 7 days, and the people did not move on until she was brought back. You know, one of the most challenging occurrences in life is to have a younger sibling become more successful than you. We first met Miriam as Moses' protective older sister. She helped in the plan to save Moses as he was placed in the Nile River. Miriam, you remember, was the one who talked to Pharaoh's daughter about finding someone to nurse this baby. And she's the one who went to get her mother Jochebed. So from a distance, she watched her brother grow up in the lap of luxury in Pharaoh's palace. And for several years now, she has watched her little brother rise to quite an impressive height. Both Miriam and Aaron had important positions among the Israelites too. Miriam had been distinguished as a prophetess, while Aaron had been chosen by God to be the high priest for the whole nation. But as they both looked at this preeminent position of Moses, Miriam and Aaron became envious. They were no longer satisfied with their own roles. They thought they should be able to carry God's message to the people like Moses did. They wanted role equality. And Miriam seems to be the one who instigated this little coup, perhaps because she couldn't find much fault with Moses' leadership. She and Aaron chose to criticize his wife. But was that the real problem, or was that just kind of a smokescreen? It seems the real problem is envy. Our envy comes out in rather strange ways sometimes. We have a closet full of disguises for this sin. We don't really need a model for envy. We don't need Miriam and Aaron to show us how it's done. We do a pretty good job of being envious on our own. We figure that out. I want you to think about what makes up envy, because we all feel it. Sometimes we feed on it. We may even be eaten up with it, as we say. To be human is to compare ourselves with others. And that's where envy takes root. We envy because we feel a lack of something. Envy begins with a comparison. And in the comparison, the result is that you feel deprived. Jealousy sounds a whole lot like envy, but it's not quite the same. Chuck Swindoll, in his book on Moses, states it like this: jealousy begins with full hands, but is frightened or threatened by the loss of its plenty. Jealousy resists or fears losing what I have, a girlfriend, a husband, a friend, or money, usually involves three people. Envy, on the other hand, begins with empty hands, mourning what it doesn't have. Envy may just involve two people. I want what you have. Here's an illustration that I've seen over and over of these two sins. I think you can follow this pretty easily. There are two girls, let's say, who are best friends, and they're inseparable, and they do everything together. And then one of them meets the boy of her dreams. And now the two of them, the boy and the girl, begin doing everything together, leaving the old friend on the sidelines. So the one left behind grows jealous because this boy has taken her friend away from her. And on the other sideline sits another boy, a very lonely boy, a boy who has dated some, but not seriously, a boy who would die to have a relationship like this friend has with this girl. And he becomes envious because he wants what he has. He wants a girlfriend. So the chorus playing nonstop in his head is, I wish that I had Jesse's girl. Where could I find a woman like that? That's going to stay in your head the rest of the day. I won't sing it because that would really ruin it for you. But one person feels envy and one person feels jealousy, and both of them are miserable, and they try to make their friends miserable as well. Fred Buechner, kind of an iconic preacher, wrote this line: envy is the consuming desire to have everybody as unsuccessful as you are. I like that. We envy because we are in a society obsessed with comparisons. We're taught to compare, and it starts from our earliest days. Parents compare. I mean, who walked first? Who potty trained first? Who's taller? Who's on the all-star team? Who got the college scholarship? Grandparents, who's got the smartest grandkids? You know, teachers compare. We put readers in groups of fast readers and slow readers. Coaches compare. Somebody bats third. Somebody bats eighth. Somebody's in the dugout. We have beauty contests, academic meets, performance evaluation. I mean, life is full of comparisons. And I wonder if our society doesn't stop at just encouraging envy, we may move into requiring envy for us to progress. We encourage everyone to earn more, to do more, to learn more, to possess more. And our society creates an inevitable environment for comparisons and consequently inevitable dissatisfaction. Advertising is a great source for envy. $600 million a day is spent to make us want something we don't have or to purchase something better than we currently have. No wonder too many of us live in this perpetual state of longing, like we talked about two Sundays ago. I'll be happy when. That's a refrain heard or thought all too often. God is pretty serious about envy. In fact, envy made it into the top 10, the top 10 list of prohibitions at the number 10 slot. And here it's called coveting, but it's a synonym for envy in Exodus 20, verse 17. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife or his male or female servant, his ox or his donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. I can't remember the last time I envied my neighbor's ox, but his 60-inch cut 15-horsepower ZTR Xmark sure looks good to me. And we envy other people for their appearance and their car and their money and their personality and their sense of humor and their lifestyle and even their spiritual gifts. Our first experience with envy usually begins in the home. It's called sibling rivalry. Children compete daily for the attention of their parents, and they assume the love supply is limited, so whoever gets the piece of cake with the most icing is loved more. We had two letters that we said around our home when the kids were young. We used to say the words, but we shortened it just to two letters, NF. What's that stand for? No fair. No fair. You've probably heard that this morning already if you have kids that are very old. And unfortunately, envy doesn't stay in the home. We take it with us wherever we go. We have a tendency to keep looking over our shoulder to see who gets the prominent office and who dresses the best and who takes the most exotic vacations to tropical climates while the rest of us freeze in Kentucky winters. Robert Bringle, he's a professor at Purdue. He wrote, "We covet or we envy most strongly in areas that are important to our self-worth." That is, we're susceptible to envy in a few areas where we feel most vulnerable or weak. I heard Nancy Beach tell a story I want to share with you. She talks about how envy strikes an area of her life in the domestic scene. Here's what she writes. "I'm most likely to become envious around women I like to call the Martha Stewarts. These are the women who effortlessly seem to design and sew their own curtains, make their own candles, perform gourmet meals to dine for. I have one friend in this category. She is an outstanding gardener. I'm sure she makes her own dirt. To top it off, my only brother married a Martha Stewart. Not only can she mother four children, create a fabulous home, sew everybody little matching outfits, and cook like Julia Childs, she also happens to be very nice. She's a godly woman. She's loving, generous, fun, pretty, and in short, she makes me sick. I noticed when they first got married, I would feel depressed whenever I left their home. As the years have gone by, I've recognized my pattern to use humor or sarcasm as mask for what is really envy. You see, envy has many disguises. It can look like constructive criticism or like self-pity, avoidance, or even fake praise." Take to heart a few questions to check if envy might be settling into your heart. Are you upset when other people succeed? Do you demean the talents or accomplishments of others? Are you tempted to sabotage someone to whom you feel inferior? Are you secretly pleased when someone like that suffers a setback? Envy sometimes operates like a cockroach. I had an apartment in college once that you would have thought the place was fairly nice and clean if you came into there in the daytime, but if you walked into that apartment with me at night and I turned a light on, you would have seen a real party going on. The roaches were on the counter, they were on the floor, they were in the cabinets, on the table you see a little group of line dancing over there, maybe a couple of roaches off in a distant corner slow dancing. You know, some other unidentifiable species carrying off a little Captain Crunch. But, you know, when the light came on, they would scatter to unknown places, hiding out until it was safe again. And envy is like that. It's hidden. It's disguised. It's hard to uncover. And it can infest your entire focus if you don't eradicate it. You may not even recognize you're envious until a plague of bitterness stifles your joy. See, we have a fine line to identify. We need to admire and praise people for who they are and what God's doing through and in them. But anything above admiration risks crossing over into envy. Maybe you've gone a healthy route and you've converted some parts of your envy to emulation. Suppose a student really envies the studious choices and grades of another, but instead of growing bitter, she chooses to follow the other girl's example of studying and discipline and hard work. Something which began as envy turned into a positive motivation. We need to be careful not to rationalize our envy. In Proverbs 27:4, anger is cruel and fury overwhelming, but who can stand before envy? Envy is not a sin God treats casually. And you pick that up right away in Numbers 12. Moses is not the one who complained about Aaron and Miriam. In verse 2, it's the Lord who heard them. In verse 9, it was the Lord whose anger burned against them. So what is it about envy that so ignites such anger in God? And here are a couple of reasons that I picked up in studying through this the last few weeks. The first one is this: envy devalues my self-worth. It denies the uniqueness God made when he created me. Gordon MacDonald writes, "The soul cannot be healthy when we compare ourselves to others. The soul dies a bit every time it is involved in a lifestyle that competes. Primarily, we envy because we look outside of ourselves to feel good about ourselves. Our Creator, on the other hand, longs for us to truly be content with how he chooses to make us and with whatever he chooses to give us. Isaiah 29, verse 16. This is worth writing down, this little text, to go back and look at. You turn things upside down as if the potter were thought to be the clay. Shall what is formed say to him who formed it, he did not make me? Can the pot say of the potter, he knows nothing? You see, when I envy others, I'm wasting energy focusing on what I cannot do or what I do not have rather than celebrating what I can do and I do have. I waste time fretting over who I am not rather than being grateful for who I am. Envy defeats joy, and envy defeats love. Envy short circuits gratitude. Envy says to God, you messed up when you made me. So one of the first consequences of envy is that it denies our self-worth. Second, envy distances us from God. You caught that in Numbers 12, verse 9. The Lord's anger burned against them, and he left them. He left them. You know, the worst thing that can happen to a follower of God is for God to remove his presence. One person puts it this way: God left them because they were not appropriately small. They thought they knew better than God. God didn't love Moses more than he loved Miriam and more than he loved Aaron. He just chose to give them a different role. That's what verse 6 through 8 in number 12 is about. Our job isn't to question God about his sovereign assignments. Our job is to submit to his authority and wisdom. Third thing, envy destroys community. Miriam and Aaron's envy would have driven a wedge between them and Moses. And their envy also would have a damaging effect on the entire community. God struck Miriam with leprosy. Miriam had failed to go along with God, and she criticized God's chosen leader. And because of her choice, there were consequences, and she had to be separated from the rest of the community. Israel couldn't move on before she was brought back. And when you first read this, do you think the punishment God chose fit the sin? It's easy to think it was a little harsh. After all she did was ask a question. And I'm not sure what to think, but by God's response, he must see envy as terribly destructive to his people. He made a strong statement. He knows envy gradually separates us from others. It's divisive, and it isolates people. James 3:16, for where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. You know, in a church, we have countless opportunities for envy. We have people here who others view as being more attractive. Some have more possessions. Some seem to have a better lifestyle, maybe an easier lifestyle. Single people envy married people. Married people might envy single people. Those without children may envy those with children. I mean, we've had a lot of people over the years here employed at Lexmark, in UK specifically, and the potential exists to envy a position someone holds that you don't. Some people with behind-the-scenes spiritual gifts long for those with more public gifts. Paul has a comment about that in 1 Corinthians. He says, all these gifts are the work of one and the same Spirit. He gives them to each one just as he determines. Paul encourages us to celebrate our individual giftedness instead of longing for something we don't have. So before we leave this morning, I want to give you a few ideas I've picked up on along the way on how to constructively deal with envy. Dante had a solution in the Inferno that probably won't work for us. He wrote, the envious should have their eyelids sewn together so they could not see what they did not have. I bet we'd still find ways to compare and long for what someone else has, even if we were blind and our eyelids were sewn shut. So you may find something helpful in these suggestions, a little more than Dante's suggestion. Here's one that I'll start out with. Call envy what it is and admit your feelings. Because envy has these cockroach tendencies, it's hard to pull it out in the light so that we can get a good look at it. Remember, envy has all kinds of disguises, constantly finding fault, lack of contentment, joylessness. So look closely, and if envy is really what's going on, just say it out loud to yourself and to God. Here's another one. Put an end to making so many comparisons. We need to train our minds not to view people in a hierarchy. Different means different, not necessarily better or worse. The bottom line is I just need to stop comparing, and I'll be a whole lot more content. So I suggest that you rid your life of sources where comparisons thrive, and you may consider starting with social media. The next one is use envy as a catalyst for change. If what you're envying is attainable, then transfer your envy to emulation. If you're envious of your coworker's weight and that's attainable for you, then get to work at attaining your goal. If what you're envying is not attainable, then come to a place of acceptance. Admit you don't have to be good at everything, and that's okay. Affirm your own uniqueness and your own choices. If you're a parent staying home with your young children and you're envying those who aren't in your circumstances who have more freedom and time for solitude and actual adult conversation, reaffirm your choice to have a family and your commitment to being home with them. Each of us is uniquely created by God. There's no one else like you. And trust that God has led you to make the choices that you've made. How many of you watched The Voice this past season? Anybody do that? Mary and I really enjoy that. This past season, there was a lady on there. Her name was Katie Caden. She should have won. It's a travesty. I don't know if I can watch The Voice anymore because Katie didn't win. She was an amazing vocalist. And she had a line on the night of her audition, the blind audition, which I thought was extremely healthy. For those of you who don't know, she's not a small woman. But she said this when the judges asked her why she wasn't already on the music scene. I mean, she's so good. Like, why aren't you already doing this? You don't need us. And here's what she said. I'm a chubby chick in a skinny girl's world, and I'm okay with that now. And that was so healthy. You know, it sounds like she's accepted who she is, and now she's free to chase her dream, you know? And she was denied her dream. On The Voice, they should have. She was the winner in my mind. But that leads to the next suggestion. Come out of the woodwork, stop hiding, and start talking. Bring this secret out in the light, and maybe see if you can work together with the person you envy and avoid a breakdown in the relationship. Two more. Work on celebrating the gifts and opportunities of others. You know, just kind of become in the habit of saying, I'm so happy for you when things happen to other people without your fingers crossed or without gritting your teeth. In Numbers 11, in fact, right before the text we looked at, Moses had an opportunity for envy. Joshua comes to him complaining that some men were prophesying who shouldn't be. But Moses isn't threatened. In verse 29 of 11, Numbers 11, Moses said, are you jealous for my sake? I wish that all the Lord's people were prophets and that the Lord would put his spirit on everybody. I mean, what a great attitude. He saw the big picture, and he wanted God to be working through as many people as possible. In God's kingdom, shared accomplishments are more important than individual accomplishments. Last fall, I was with some of you guys here, and we were at a habitat build. And when we got there, we walked out onto an empty slab of concrete. And there was a pile of 2x4s, and there were a few walls laying on the ground put together. But at the end of the day, all the walls were up for that entire house. I mean, no single person could have done that by themselves in 6 hours. It took a team, even most of the team being rookies, you know. It's a shared accomplishments, and so be joyful that everybody can have a part in this. And finally, find your contentment and significance in God. I think this is the easiest one to say. It's the hardest of all to do because it boils down to this question. Do you believe that if you have Jesus, you have enough? Can you say, Jesus is all I need? That's easy to say. It's hard to embrace with all that you are. Jesus is all I need. Psalm 73, I want to share this with you. Whom have I in heaven but you? And earth has nothing I desire besides you. My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. As for me, it's good to be near God. I've made the sovereign Lord my refuge. I will tell of all your deeds. You know, the simplicity of being with God will be a lifelong journey. God, he longs for us to live at peace. He demands that we get rid of envy to get us on that course. For our own sake, for the sake of our relationship with him, for the sake of our community, though living with envy every day may be a work of the flesh, overcoming envy certainly is not. Overcoming envy is the result of walking with the Spirit. So if you're being tortured by chronic envy or being harassed by envy's little sniper fire, take some time right now to lay that out and maybe even pray with someone here before you go. Let's stand and sing.